Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. We are rethinking how we build customer relationships, and I'm so excited to introduce you to today's guest. Welcome, Rachel Probyn.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, we're going to get right into it, Rachel. What is your hot take?
Oh boy, my hot take is involved and hot. My thinking is that right now I feel like business, and it's only going to get more so this way with the advent of AI, but I think it's moved too far away from the human element. It's almost emotionally abusive, most of corporate America. It treats people like cogs in a machine. It doesn't have any space for people to have lives outside the office, for people to, if someone's on your team and coming in and they're going through something, that's going to happen because it's not a computer, it's a human. There needs to be space in there and people need to be able to be treated with respect. And I just don't think that's happening. And you're never going to get the best work out of people when you don't treat them with respect and autonomy. You know, people rise to the level of what you expect of them and to the level of respect that you give them. You're never going to get respect back for treating people like less than. So that's really what I think the biggest problem is right now. Just this disconnect of treating people like they're not human. And this attitude of like, well, you better do it and do it with a smile because there are 100 people behind you, you know, down the block will take your job tomorrow. That's not a way to treat people. And it's not a way to get what you want out of them. So that is my biggest concern and frustration right now that I'm seeing across really all, you know, most industries, like, you know, a lot of startups, a lot of corporate America, tech. It's just gotten very depersonalized. I don't need it to be like the we're a family, you know, because that's creepy and wrong. Just some basic human decency. I think we've really gotten away from that. And the best managers, the best companies, you know, that I've worked in, leadership requires humanity and it requires leading people, not just yelling metrics at them. That's not effective. So my thinking and what I've really shifted my focus to, you know, of course, I'm still teaching customer success, but it's always been about leadership and customer success leadership is really that human first leadership, because not only is it, you know, the right thing to do, it's also the most effective, i.e. it makes the most money. You get the most out of your team when you treat them with respect, when you give them the opportunity to make an impact. You know, when you say, hey, here's what we need. Here's why. Like, here's the result I want. Here's why that's important. You know, now go, don't break the law and get me that result. And kind of leave it at that. And like, I'm here for support, that I'm not going to be standing over your shoulder every second of the day. And being respectful, you know, saying, how is your workload? And if you have a team that's been cut in half, if you're the leader, you have to go and stand up and say, like, look, 5 people cannot do the work of 10. You know, like, maybe you can figure out a way for AI to do some of that. But most people are not set up for that. They've kind of jumped the gun on that. And it's just running people into the ground. So my belief is that if we teach newer managers to be human first leaders, that will actually trickle up because it makes more money. And anything that makes more money is what people want to glom on to. The reason that they're not, you know, and that's not being, because the evidence is out there, right? The reason it's not currently best practice is because people are scared. People aren't logical, especially when it comes to money. And in business in general, most of us are acting from a place of fear. You know, any CEO can tell you, like, anything they've built up, they're terrified they're going to lose it tomorrow. Like, this is all a fluke. I don't know how this happened. It's definitely going to fall apart. You're not making your most logical decisions when you're like that. And, you know, I talk a lot about psychology. I study it obsessively. The way your brain is set up and your nervous system is set up is not all that different from when we were, you know, cave people and we were trying to prevent getting, you know, eaten by lions and such. We wanted what was safe and predictable. We didn't like to try anything new, but anything that seemed like it might be a threat to our existence, which is most things, you know, we would go into fight or flight. Or if we're talking about women, freeze or fawn, which are the kind of other side of fight or flight. And I think that our nervous systems are in that condition a lot of times at work, because your job, your body understands that your job has to do with, this is how I get money. This is how I put food on the table. This is how I have shelter. And anything that comes along and is a little bit different and might threaten that, all of a sudden people are activated and they're not thinking logically. You know, I like to use this analogy where people talk about, you know, it's hard to say no to others, to other projects, without the other person getting really mad. And I think that comes down to not that the person doesn't have time to work on your project, but that that person then feels like, wait a minute, are they more important than me? Do they think they're more important than me? Do other people think they're more important than me? Like, if other people think they're more important than me, then my job is at risk. And now I'm mad, you know? And when none of that is going on, that is a story they're telling themselves in their head. But this is how we are. We make up these stories in our heads, believe them, and then go and act on them all day long. We're all telling different stories. So that's why this doesn't happen automatically. That's why it requires screening. But I do believe that's the way out of the pretty bad financial mess we're in, is more humanity. And I don't know that we're going to get it with the age of AI, but I'm going to fight like hell.
So I just took like a whole page of notes, because you and I share a love of psychology. That was what my background was in. I always tell people psychology was my passion, but I got a marketing degree because I needed a job that actually, you know, paid me. I want to come back to, you know, you made a comment about our bodies recognize that our jobs are how we pay bills and survive. And I always love to think about, as a leader, that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
I was just going to say Maslow, baby.
Exactly. And I think it applies here, because people want good paychecks, right? Yeah. They want to be able to feed their families. They want to feel safe physically, psychologically, and socially. But that ultimate pinnacle of Maslow is that self-actualization. People want that. That's not just something that's made up. People want to do work that matters.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be, you know, that you're saving the world.
Right.
It can be something where it's like, this genuinely, when used correctly, this genuinely makes someone's life easier and better for the day, even if it's like just at their work. That's enough, you know, that you're making someone's life and day a little bit easier and better. That's enough for a lot of us, you know, but most people aren't given the why of what they're supposed to do. And they're not given the, they're not asked their opinion on strategy. You know, I really like to involve my teams, being like, all right, so here's the problem we're trying to solve. You know, I have ideas about ways we can do that, but I want to hear from you guys, because you're the ones actually talking to customers. You're the ones on the front lines. So what are you hearing? What are you thinking? You know, I'm not necessarily going to take every single person's idea, but I need that input. I want that input. And then we're going to discuss our direction forward, you know, get buy-in and move forward as a team. You know, I think that every team I've ever run, and run that way, not when I was first starting, it was horrible. But every team I've run that way has tripled its effectiveness in less than 6 months. Like, their metrics, their speed, because they were excited, they wanted to go above and beyond. I never asked them to. In fact, I asked them to take more rest.
Right.
But they were
chill
excited.
Out. It's okay to like take a break.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know why you're emailing this at 11 o'clock at night. But even that was a chance to learn, like, well, I was picking my daughter up from 3 to 4. It's like, All right. But like, don't be working from like then 5 or 6 till now. But, you know, but I love it when they're excited. I love when I'm excited by my work. But you can't be excited if your job is just to like be a button pusher or be like, go here, push this on someone. You have to know that you're making any kind of positive difference.
Yeah, especially because I had a guest on the podcast a couple of weeks ago who said something that still sticks with me. And he said that your employee experience sets the ceiling for your customer experience. And if mm-hmm. you will never 100%. Exceed CX for your EX. And no. and that was one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, you can make a financial return on investment case for a great employee experience. And we're not talking like ping pong tables and pizza parties, but Hell exactly no. what you're yeah. saying, like that real connection to the work that they're doing, the understanding yeah. of the why, like people want to be involved. People want to understand. People want to do good work. I fundamentally believe that people want to yeah. do good work. It's that they
want to be
always,
recognized for
and
that
they want to be too. Recognized. Yes. And they want to contribute. And when they get boxed out that they start to get demoralized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely, you know, I want people to have input on strategy and be able to say in an ELT meeting, like, oh, that was actually Adriana's idea. I could not do this in, you know, my best day. That's not my strong suit. So she put this together. And because of that, we were able to do X, Y, and Z, you know, and then being able to see how you're contributing to those larger goals gives you some ownership. You know, people are always wondering, like, why they want people to have an owner's mindset. First of all, unless you're giving them an owner's percentage,
yeah,
not going to happen. But you have to give them the sense that, like, yes, your ideas are heard, they matter, they're contributing, and they're making a difference. It doesn't take a lot, you know? Like, that costs you nothing to do that.
And yet, we see how many stories, how many businesses, how many people are utterly failing at this.
Yes.
I think there's a convergence of factors, right? Nothing is ever as simple as, you know, one thing. Sure. So when you were talking about how, you know, it's not going to get better, it's only going to get worse. And I'm like, I probably agree with you on that on some front. Hopefully people like you and I exist in the world who can move things in the right direction. Yes. But I wrote down things like, you know, it might be generational or combination of generational factors. It might be remote work. And don't get me wrong, I work from home. So I love remote work. But I also have to work twice as hard to make a human connection with people because I've never met them face to face. AI and automation is certainly a problem. But I also feel like there's one of the things that I'm hearing from people is our customers and our employees are less loyal than ever before. They will switch at the drop of a hat. They will go to a new company. They will resume hop. Again, maybe mm-hmm. some generational difference there. But what else is causing this shift in losing our humanity for the sake of the shareholders?
Exactly. And again, it's not that people want to do that. And it's not even that they don't care about their employees, but the fear comes first before the caring. You know, if you're busy being caring and kind and thinking about others, you're getting eaten by the lion.
Right.
So even though there isn't a lion right now, our nervous systems don't know that. Our brain doesn't know that. And when, you know, the fear-based part of the brain, that primitive part of the brain is activated, it actually disconnects the frontal lobe, which is the logical part of the brain. It kind of cuts that off and is like, we don't have time for you right now. We have to live. And the, you know, that part of your brain that is more primitive and more fear-based, the amygdala, it is not, you know, it's not logical. It's just trying to get you out of that situation fast and screw anyone and anything that gets in your way. And it takes about 20 minutes after you're in that state to get any kind of logic and stasis back. And that's why it's so difficult to be like, oh, just take a breath in the moment. It's like, you can't think of that. The part of your brain that's going to tell you to do that is offline. So, you know, as companies are expected to produce more and more with less and less, I don't know who thought this was a good idea and that it was feasible, but as
the shareholders
to do more. Yeah, but it's like this doesn't work. So therefore, you are not getting more money. It's like you could try it, but it doesn't math. You know, I'm not even good at math, but I see that it doesn't math.
Yeah.
You know, we are not. And something I see in the way that people try and adjust to this is, you know, in their time management. And I teach a lot about time management as a new leader, because it is so different from being an IC. Because now you have to say no. It's part of your job description, but people don't tell you that. So you just end up being like, yes, yes, okay, yes, I guess I have to take that on because someone gave it to you. And people are going to be doing that to the point where you cannot possibly do all the things you need to do. And you're going to end up working more hours than is healthy, then you can do your best work. And so part of the job as a new leader is to not just push back, but prioritize. Say like, all right, what's the most important thing? What is my job? My job as, you know, head of CS is to increase NRR. How can I do that? First, I need to affect GRR. I need to affect retention because that is the thing that is going to cost us the most first, especially in this economy where retention is not as sure as it was. So, you know, explaining that to whoever your boss is and saying like, I actually am targeting the financial aspect of this, keeping my eye on that ball. These are the things that we should be focusing on. These are the things I'm going to spend my time on because that's what's going to affect this metric. I would love to be part of these other things. They're exciting. They're important. But I can't fit 10 pounds of potatoes into a 5-pound bag. So for now, let's focus on this. Let's put these things in a parking lot, or maybe someone else has time for them. But being able to advocate and just be confident enough to say, this is what we need to do. Even if you're not entirely sure, I think you can figure out that you can't do everything all at once. And people try and be like, no, maybe if I just time block and if I organize things better and if I have the right morning routine, it's like, that's not going to make more hours in the day. And it's not going to give you more brain power than you currently possess because you are a human and had limitations.
Well, and you talked a lot about in this about like the fear is the first thing you have to overcome, right? That emotion. And I think a lot of us are trying to rationalize after the fact that our decision was logical. Right. So like we might have made an emotional decision, but we're not willing to admit that it was an emotional decision because emotional decision making is frowned upon, right? It's something that people say, oh, well, I can't hire this person because they're so emotional, right? How many times do we hear that, especially as women? But when we make an emotional decision, which we do, and rationalize after the fact, which we do.
That's the default. We make, especially purchasing decisions, we make decisions.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. Based on emotion and justify with logic. And we're masters at it. We don't even realize we're justifying. We think we're right.
Well, yeah, because of course I skipped right past that emotional decision and made a logical decision. This is going to give us a return on investment. And I really thought through it. And it had nothing to do with my preconceived notions or my personal preferences or my emotional in the moment thinking.
I mean, mindset work, most people never get the chance or are introduced to any of that anyway. I do cover that in some of my work. And I always say to people, like, you're going to roll your eyes that we have this. That's why we have it at the end. You can skip it if you want. I advise you not to. But that's always the part they come away with being like, oh my God, that like changed my life. It changed how I think about myself. It changed what I, you know, how I move in the world, you know. But my whole tip, and this isn't just a mindset tip, this is just a practicality. The whole reason I like understanding the brain is to then be like, all right, well, this is how it really works. So how can I work around that, you know, within its parameters? So for me, you know, if I'm going to have a conversation with someone where I know that we're probably going to disagree on something or we have different priorities, which is most likely the reason that people disagree, you know, like if we're battling with sales, I'm like, hey, don't sign these people because they're going to churn, like they're a terrible fit. They're going to have a horrible experience. They're going to tell other people. You know, sales might want to help you out, but you're asking them to not hit their numbers.
Right.
And that's just not realistic.
To like give up something that's going to help them and their job and their income and their livelihood. They're never going to do that.
No. So most people don't even think about that. They just go into the conversation being like, you're doing what's bad for the business. And they're like, okay, but this is my job over here. That's your job to keep them. It's like,
we almost need to have like a Maslow's hierarchy of business, individual contributor first, and then what's good for the team, and then what's good for the business. But in that
I think a lot of these problems arise because of misaligned compensation, because we send these different departments out for single targets, not realizing how they all come together and impact each other.
Right. Organism and holistic approach rather than individualistic approach.
Yes, exactly. And I think because EOS is so widely taught, especially among entrepreneurs and people who are just building.
Yeah, we run on EOS. Yeah.
And EOS works great till between 2 and 5 million, and then it all falls apart.
Yeah. Well, I got a little bit of time before that then, so we're good.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Because that's when you start to see like, oh, this is helping us. This is making us meet the goals that make sense to us, but it actually has a bad impact on the customer because we're not listening to them. We're not paying attention. And these things are conflicting with them. And they're not focused on the customer. I do want to hop back just one or two clicks because you said something that I meant to respond to. And that was about, loyalty and customers not being loyal and employees not being loyal. Mm-hmm. No one owes you any kind of loyalty. Just as you as an employer are not going to keep someone on the unemployed if it doesn't make sense financially, you just can't, right? It's the same with employees. If, they can love you, but if someone else is going to pay you $15,000, $20,000 more, and your job has probably increased in scope since you joined, not gotten less. And with inflation going up, you're actively paying that person less for more than was their original job. What are they supposed to do? And
I think the loyalty thing, though, is what businesses are saying, right? Like our employees are hopping and our customers are hopping. I think it's actually a different problem, and the lack of loyalty is just a symptom. I think it's easier to move and switch and move on than ever before, right? It used to be you had to install
hardware. Not for employees right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But in terms of hardware or SaaS, it is easier. To switch, but the thing is that it can be false loyalty. Like there can be loyalty of I go to the coffee shop a block from me. It's not that good, but it's convenient. If I move, will I ever go back there? No. It's just the closest one and it was easiest to do right now. But customers don't owe you loyalty ever.
Right. But now that it's easier to switch, you have to work harder to earn that time, attention, and trust.
Right. You have to actually, honestly, customers don't want to switch. It's a pain in the ass. I don't know if I can swear on here. Okay, good. They don't want to switch. It's a pain in the ass. They'd rather not have to worry about it.
Yep.
But a couple of things are happening. Like if you're not meeting the need that they bought it for, which is the whole thing about customer success and why we're here, because they don't automatically get that result out of the product just because your product can do it. Doesn't mean the human is going to extract that result. Because again, we're wacky. We're not logical. If it were two machines talking to each other, I'm sure it would be all fine and dandy, but that is not what you are dealing with here. So that's the table stakes for them staying. If another company comes along and is like, hi, we'll give you the exact same thing for half price. Yeah, you're probably not getting the exact same thing, but try telling that to your boss and your stakeholders. It's really a hard argument to make because money is not free back when it was with ZIRP, with zero interest repayment period or something. But basically money was free. We don't have that anymore. And now that everyone's penny pinching, they're going to go to the lowest option. Sometimes they'll come back. They're like, oh, that was terrible.
Right.
Which is why you have to treat them nicely on the way out the door. But no one owes your company loyalty. No one, your employees don't owe you loyalty unless you've given them an amazing experience first.
Yeah.
And it is possible to do that with both.
You have to do the legwork first.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your hot take that we're losing our humanity in business.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're coaching a leader who wants to start putting humanity back into business,
mm-hmm.
what is the one step you would have them do first?
One. So much of that is how they perceive what's necessary. We would have a conversation about what do you think is the most important thing that has to get done, right? And how are you going about getting that done? Are you telling people they have to? Or are you threatening them? Are you sitting over their shoulder watching them? Are you, saying that's it, you better figure it out? Or Are you working on it with them? Are you showing up as a resource? You know, really asking questions and being like, all right, well, what would happen if you did it this way? You know, and how do you react when you're treated like that?
Right. Really, really uncovering the humanity of what they're currently doing and trying to figure out where those gaps are.
Exactly. Because again, most of it's fear. And when you get to that fear, it's like, well, if I do this, if I do it that way, all of this is going to fall apart and I'm going to lose what I care about. So taking that, reframing it, using some CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, you know, also you can use those. You can use from NLP, like sleight of mouth situations, which again, it's just reframing. It's just helping you look at things in a more logical way, taking away the story in your head to a point where you truly believe, oh, I was making a mistake, and being able to see that error. Yeah. That's where I really like to approach it. And that's why the mindset work's so important. It's like, oh, they're not going to make any kind of move until they see that that wasn't true and that something else is possible. And mostly, I think you get to, most people in this space are not, you know, are not like authoritarian and, you know, or so technical that they can't stand dealing with people.
Right.
You know, most of them are softies like us, and most of them don't know that you can lean into that compassion and truly lean into who you are and how you are with others outside of work. And that can be a strength, and that can be so much more effective because it's no longer up to you to get the thing done as the leader. It's up to you to influence and help other people achieve their best. So sometimes it does take a little of untwisting of that mindset work, but it's really understanding, why am I doing these things the way that I am? How's it working? And, you know, what if we did it this way, and trying it as an experiment in a very small dose, right? You know, all right, let's try that with this one very small project that doesn't really matter that much. You know, just see what happens when you go after it that way. I'm a big fan of the small experiment.
Yeah, take a little step. Not
exactly.
Don't try to boil the whole ocean, to steal a phrase from my consulting friends. Rachel, if we're looking to kind of grow and continuously learn, who else is out there? Who do you think is leading the charge? Who is driving and changing the way we build customer relationships?
Customer relationships in particular, I would say Bob London is actually who I would point you to there, because he has a similar view as I do, you know, in looking at leaders and how leadership works, as he does with customers, which is really just put away the deck, listen. You know, he does something called radical authentic discovery. There's a lot of active listening, and you can get much deeper with customers when you truly shut up and try and understand their problems, who they are as humans, what they're trying to achieve, what their business goals are. You know, he has a bunch of questions you can ask, but it's about getting out of your head and like, here's what I have to do and what I have to achieve. Being able to let that go and go in and listen and really get that information, you're going to go so much farther. So I point everybody to that.
Bob's a good dude. I sat in on one of the seminars a couple months ago, and he, really, really smart guy. Really, really. I love the acronym RAD. I think that's super cool. That's super rad, I guess I'll say.
Yeah.
And if someone is really connecting with you, Rachel, they want to learn more. They want to download on psychology or learn about your approach to humanity and business. Where can they find you online?
If you're into the psych angle, you definitely want to go to my podcast, Psychology of Customer Success. It hasn't had an episode in a little while, but I'm recording one Friday, so it is coming back. I do get deep into the psych there. If you want to work with me on either CS leadership, or I'm developing a program for first-time managers in tech in general, you know, just those who are being people leaders for the first time so they can learn how to do this and not get those bad habits. All that would be on provansuccess.com. You know, I can help you find a job as a CS leader, help you succeed as a CS leader through CS Leadership Academy. Those are always the best ways to find me, is through ProVanSuccess.com, and just get on my newsletter. I'll be sending you interesting articles that are under 5 minute reads once a week, and you'll hear about what I have to offer. And I would love to help you. And don't be afraid to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Like, just following me on there, you're probably not going to see my stuff because of algorithm.
Yeah, we got to fight the algorithm gods.
Yeah, seriously. So, you know, just go straight to my website, because you'll never see me on there despite posting every day. But if you want to message me on there, I am about as threatening as a hamster. So feel free. I'm always down to say hi.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on The Growth Signal. This was a really fascinating conversation.